light, buddy?
Yeah, sure, kid. There you go.
And your wallet.
Nick, give him your wallet.
What for?
He's got a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
The Cut Print Film Podcast turns 31 today. In an effort to highlight their masculinity, the boys watch Knife in the Water. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Well, well, well. If it isn't the Cut Print Film Podcast episode 31, we meet again.
Ugh, I knew this would happen.
Who are you?
I'm one third of your host, Dave Kostel.
I'm two thirds of your host, Jeff Rollins. That math doesn't check out, by the way. Show your work.
I'm a quart of your host, Chris Evangelista.
Well, here
we're
are
like,
again.
Together we form a single host, yeah. Like Captain Planet.
It's the host of church, a.k.a. Jesus.
That's us. So, we're off to a great start.
Yeah, now that we got all the energy out of the room.
I'm so confused.
I'm trying to remember what I would say at communion, but it's been too long.
You say the body of Christ.
Anyway. So what'd you see this week, Chris? Anything good?
No. I didn't see anything good, but I did see The Equalizer starring Denzel Washington.
And Chloe Moretz.
Yes. Who,
and a bunch of other people.
She needs a better agent, because I think she's very talented, but man, she gets into some drecky films.
What is The Equalizer?
The Equalizer is yet another film in the genre of there's a guy who's he's a loner, but he's really good at stuff, and someone brings him in to do the stuff, and the stuff is killing people. It's based on a TV show, which I've never seen, and I'm sure it has really nothing to do with the TV show. Because
that sounds riveting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole premise is every thriller that's come out in the last 10 years or so.
Enough of that. And
like I said to you, you posted the picture on our review, and it's just Denzel Washington in a Home Depot uniform, and I immediately knew the entire plot of the movie.
I
had never seen a trailer.
Yeah, he plays a guy who works at Home Depot, but he used to be...
It's actually called Dome Hepo.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get the rights.
Apparently. It's clearly Home Depot, but they don't call it that. But he used to work for, I guess he's like a CIA agent. I don't even know. It's not clear.
That's the thing. All the TV spots say his secret will be revealed.
Right.
And I read your review. It doesn't sound like it ever is.
Like, at one point he goes and he talks to someone who works at the CIA who knows him, so I'm assuming...
That's the secret?
Like, yeah,
but a bullshit way to get
he knows a guy
theater.
Who works at the CIA.
Well, it's a woman. It's played by Melissa Leo, but also Bill Pullman plays her husband, who's just there. It was like...
That's a big get.
Is this the best?
We got Pullman.
Our Independence Day. All right.
Bill. I felt bad for Bill Pullman because he doesn't do anything. He just plays. He plays like the husband of this CIA director.
Does he pull it?
Yeah, he pulls it hard.
I don't understand what we're doing.
So anyway, Denzel Washington. He's really good at murdering people. And Chloe Moretz she's a prostitute, and she's one of those like movie prostitutes who's like really sweet and innocent, but she has to be a prostitute for some reason.
Right. She's unlike in real life, she's an attractive prostitute.
Yeah.
But in real life, they all look like they've been drugged down the street by a truck.
So Jodie Foster and
in Taxi Driver. But that's better. That's more realistic in Taxi Driver than in this movie, where and her pimps are like stereotypical Russian bad guys.
I love that we have Russian villains again.
Yeah, and they're just the worst of the worst, and so he tries to buy her freedom, I guess. And they laugh out of the
thing that people do.
Yeah, and they laugh out of the room with they're like, "Ha ha, da comrade!" Like this generic Dracula Russian accents, and then he kills them all. And by killing all these Russian guys, they bring in this other guy who works for the Russians, who is the most stereotypical bad guy I've ever seen in the movie. Like. He's comically evil, where he's just like, I can smell your fear. It's just like, get the fuck out of here. And it's just a
role like that is only good when an actor like Werner Herzog.
Yeah, if you have like a good like, I've never heard of this
guy.
Like
Jack Reacher. Yeah.
Yeah,
I've never heard of the guy. I'm sure he's done stuff before. I don't fucking care because he's boring. I'm not gonna even look him up. His name. I don't give a shit. It's a dull movie. It's a movie I feel like we as a culture have, we should be past this by now. We don't need movies like this anymore.
It's filler movie.
Yeah.
That's all that is. That's,
like, it's not a terrible movie, but it's like, why would anyone give a shit about this? But it made a bunch of money because I guess people wanted to watch it.
Did it make money?
It did well this weekend, but I mean, not a lot's out this weekend because the only other thing out this weekend is Box Trolls, which you saw, I believe.
Yes, I did.
How was that?
Boxy.
I was completely uninterested. Even though it looked gorgeous, I just can't get into it.
I have a trouble like getting into stop motion stuff for some reason. I don't know why. I can't get into it.
I had an aversion to it going into it. I was just like, ugh. Like, for some reason, it appeared to be Wallace and Gromit-y. Like, right. And I'm not into that.
No.
But it, and there were elements of.
It looks better than that.
Oh yeah, it looks much better. It looks. It's the best looking stop motion movie I've ever seen.
Really?
That's how good it looks. I mean, just because of the technology.
Better than a year without a Santa Claus.
I missed that one. So.
Hey, speaking of stop motion, we have a comprehensive history of stop motion animation on cutprintfilm.com. Yeah, you should check it out. That's our website, everybody.
And we're a movie podcast.
Oh, yeah. We didn't say that because we're bad at our jobs.
Our job is trash men.
So Box Trolls was cool. I don't want to give away too much of it. It was very Dickensian. I like that. I don't know if you read my review, but I mentioned
it. I read it.
There.
Nope.
Oh, yeah.
I read it. And
I
actually
don't read your stuff, dude.
Yeah.
It's too lowbrow.
One of the cool things I like that the Box Trolls did was there's three henchmen, and two of them, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, are the voices of them.
Oh, cool.
And they appear, like, their motivations, they think they're the good guys, and it slowly throughout the movie dawns on them that they're like doing bad things, and they're just like,
oh, so there's depth to the character.
Yeah, it was.
I like that when movies give their characters depth.
Even
yeah, you literally just turned the corner for me, and I'm probably gonna.
They're
seek
very
it out.
Ancillary characters, but they have like motive and.
Yeah, that's nice because I'm currently I'm watching all of the Saw films for a massive retrospective on cutprintfilm.com, and man, do none of those characters have depth. So I miss it. I miss when characters have depth.
Would you like to play a game, Chris?
No, I wouldn't.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Would you like to play a little game?
All right. Well, if you put it like that.
Oh, okay.
A little game. We'll play a little one.
Yeah, if it's just a tiny game. Like Hearts.
But then the third, it was a funny counterbalance that the third henchman is just the most maniacal, evil little creature you've ever seen. This blows me away, voiced by Tracy Morgan.
Right.
It doesn't sound like him at all.
He seems out of place because everyone in that movie is, aren't they like British? And then Tracy Morgan is in. Is he yeah. putting on like a British accent by
Tracy
the chance?
Tracy Morgan, a lunatic American man.
I get, maybe it's just something they could put on the poster.
Like Tracy Morgan's in this.
To try and draw in a different right. demographic. But he only says his actions. Like, he's really creepy.
That sounds hilarious.
Yeah, he's like, like just like weird shit like that.
Right.
I read that these characters are better, much better versions of the minions from Despicable Me.
Yeah, I've never seen a Despicable Me movie.
You don't have to.
But I can imagine that that's true. I love the Box Trolls. They're awesome.
Okay,
like cool. As creatures, I'll watch this movie with my kid in whenever I have a kid in the distant future, but
you can watch it with my kid.
Well,
alone.
It was cool.
Unsupervised.
In jail. I don't know why you're both in jail.
Your kid's evil, Jeff.
Visiting hours are over. Oh, we only got halfway through Box Trolls this time.
See you tomorrow.
You're actually visiting my daughter
you're visiting
in jail.
Jeff's infant daughter in jail.
This reminded me of the classic live action movies of our childhood, things like Little Monsters and
please don't compare this to Little Monsters because now I don't
Gremlins.
What about Little Giants? is Icebox in this?
Ice
or Ice Chest, as that boy calls her, and shocked me when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
Oh my!
And Ben Kingsley plays Archibald Snatcher, like the most villainous.
When I was reading your review, I liked like how everyone has like they're very like Dickensian names.
Yeah,
cause Dickens loved like fucking names like that.
You can immediately tell. But the one cool thing is that the Box Trolls themselves all have very simple names, and it's whatever kind of box they're wearing.
Okay.
So like, there's one named Shoe, there's one named Fish, and the boy's name is Eggs. And they talk in this very like kind of like Jawas, but then they can say like a word every now and then, like they'll be like, oh shit. But they won't say shit.
Oh, they don't say shit in box trolls. I was really excited for a moment there.
And the humor is funny. I was laughing. None of the kids in the theater were laughing, but the kids I were watching it was watching it with were a little too young.
Yeah, I feel like it's like a crapshoot with kid movies, because some kids, they just, a lot of kids movies, not a lot, but there are certain kids movies that are just too smart for kids.
Yeah, but then there was a big fart scene at the end, and huge laugh.
That's all you need.
But yeah, Box, I was pleasantly surprised by Box Trolls, and nice. I will recommend
it. Was that your movie recommendation? You're spoiling it at the beginning of the show again?
It came in third place this weekend.
How much did it make?
$17 million.
$7.
Is the budget on there, perchance?
No.
Mayhaps?
No. No haps. Nayhaps.
One of the things I said in my review was, I'm surprised Disney hasn't bought up, how do you say it? Leica? That can't be right, because that's the camera.
Leica. I think it's like Leica.
I'm surprised Disney hasn't bought them yet, because they do amazing work, and how they were tied into Nightmare Before Christmas, it doesn't make any sense.
I was looking at footage of it, and I was amazed at how smooth it looked. Like, this looks really well done.
It looks like computer animation.
Yeah, like, it doesn't look like stop motion.
Yeah, like Archibald Snatcher, you can just tell by, like, his coat is like a dirty red velvet. You know how guys used to, what are they called? Like Artful Dodgers would wear those, those felt coats. But you could just tell that there were lice in the, felt like there was dirt and grime in his coat, but you couldn't
that's
see
that's impressive.
It. Yeah, it was awesome. It was very textured, I guess that's the word.
Nice.
What I'm trying
very
to
very impressive that they could do that with clay.
Just like try my leg. That's textured, too.
Oh, you're right. Look at that.
Smooth.
Oh, where did you get this tattoo?
I shaved.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, we are off the rails.
Enough of touching Dave's leg.
Yeah. I guess.
So what's next up on the docket?
I think we're going to do our director series. We're moving on from David Cronenberg this week.
Yeah, yes. We have a new director.
Before we get into that, let me get into this. Director series. Director series. That's it. I think that's enough. They've heard enough.
All right. And we're in this. We gotta come up with something better. We need something short and sweet. That's like,
the director series.
We'll just use that.
I do have this.
Was that the Saw puppet? The director series.
All right. So
everyone just tuned out.
Yeah.
Who are we doing this series on?
We're doing Roman Polanski.
All right, I've never heard of him. Why don't you tell me about?
I'll tell you all about him.
The man with the most Polish name possible.
Yeah. He really is.
Born in 1933, Roman Polanski is a Polish and, since 1976, naturalized French film director, producer, writer, and even actor.
Did you say he was born in 1993?
1933.
Oh, okay.
If I said 93, that was a flub. That will go in the continuity error section of IMDb.
Right. Into the goofs.
Born on the set of Jurassic Park.
So, Polanski survived the Holocaust, but his mother, having been sent to Auschwitz, did not. Yeah. Polanski's filmmaking career began in the 1960s when he started with smaller foreign films like Knife in the Water, which is our film tonight, and Repulsion, before finding a more mainstream success with Rosemary's Baby. But in 1969, Polanski's pregnant wife, actress Sharon Tate, was murdered along with four other people at the Polanski residence by members of the Manson family. Remember them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
Or I think it's Skelter Helter.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
It is not.
I think Beautiful People is the song you're thinking of by Marilyn Manson.
Yes.
Following
the most
the
gorgeous of all the Mansons.
So that's two cursed women in Polanski's
life.
Yeah,
well, it gets worse. So following the tragedy, Polanski found even more filmmaking success with Chinatown in 1974, and it found his career on the rise. But in 1977, after a photo shoot in Los Angeles, Polanski was arrested for the rape of a 13-year-old girl and pleaded guilty to the charge of unlawful sex with a minor. However, to avoid sentencing, Polanski fled to London before settling in France and has lived in exile ever since. Despite his exile and legal troubles, Polanski continued to find success as a filmmaker, even winning Best Director at the Oscars in 2002 for The Pianist. Mm-hmm. Other Polanski films include Macbeth, Tess, Frantic, The Ninth Gate, and many more.
Yes.
And that's all I got.
All right. Polanski is one of my favorite directors.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I love his work, especially his early work.
Especially Tess.
Big fan of Tess.
Yeah, Tess Weekend, everyone.
I've never seen Tess.
No, nor should you.
Nor do I plan on it.
I probably will watch it after this.
Never.
Where's he hiding out? Is he still in France? Or is he in...
Sorry, I didn't write that down, so I don't have an answer.
I feel like...
I believe he's in that cave where they found Saddam Hussein.
I want to say he's in Austria. That sounds right. Because I know they always try to lure him to, like, Switzerland or somewhere.
With candy. Polanski, there's candy over here in Switzerland.
They, like, nominate him for awards, and they're like, come speak. And they just want to, like, suck him back to the U.S.
It's like cops setting up award ceremonies.
It's just entrapment. Anyhow, yeah, Polanski's awesome, and
Polanski's
as a director,
films are awesome.
Yeah, let's quantify what he's awesome at.
Polanski's a piece of shit as a person.
Yeah, he is a bad person. I mean, we won't get in. I don't know if we're gonna get in too much about his personal life.
There is a nonchalant creepiness about it, because I was just watching like the featurette on Knife in the Water,
right.
And it's an interview with him at a cafe with a nice cup of coffee, but he. As you're watching it, you're getting sucked into how he's telling you the stories about being on set for Knife in the Water. And every now and then you're just like, ugh, like he's a little weird.
Yeah.
Like he'll say weird things. Like he's still not totally not weird.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's probably like mentally unhinged at this point after everything.
He seems like it.
I mean, he's gone through, and not to lessen his crimes, but he's gone through so much shit. I feel like at this point he's probably not all there.
There was an HBO documentary, which I think I recommended months ago, called Roman Polanski, Wanted and Desired.
Right.
And oh, yeah, you did.
That nonchalance about what he did with that girl, he was behaving that way even back then in interviews.
Right.
Just very like, oh, yeah, well, I had sex with her. What's the big deal?
Yeah. Like, he tried acting like it was like a European
like a cultural
thing.
Yeah. Really? They rape women over there, and it's okay. Okay. But enough about rape.
Yeah, let's get off the rape train.
And let's get into Knife in the Water. 1962's Knife in the Water. And this was Roman Polanski's debut film.
It was.
Yeah, Polanski came up with the story. A very simple story.
Very simple.
And at that time, everything was nationalized in Poland. It was not right after World War I, but I mean, they had just rebuilt the country. And they weren't fully communist, but they were just...
You had to pass everything through the Ministry of Culture.
Yeah, exactly. Very Orwellian, almost.
Yeah, and it is a compact story. My synopsis is only 13 paragraphs this time.
It's very simple.
let me get into this plot synopsis.
Only 13 paragraphs. I was slow to catch on that.
It starts with this dialogue. Lady, there's a boat in the water.
Yes, it was filmed on the Schuylkill.
Yeah.
All right, so... the plot of Knife in the Water goes a little like this.
I think it would go something like this.
And one and a two. Andre and Christina are driving to a lake to go sailing when they come upon a young hitchhiker in the middle of the road. After nearly hitting him, Andre invites the young man along. When they arrive at the lake, instead of leaving the man behind, Andre invites him to go sailing with them. The young man accepts the offer, and not knowing much about sailing, must learn many hard lessons from Andre.
Mm.
Meanwhile, tension gradually builds between Andre and the hitchhiker as they vie for the attentions of Christina. The title of the film refers to the major turning point when Andre taunts the young man with the latter's treasured pocket knife, which is accidentally lost overboard.
Which is also huge for a pocket knife. It's like a steak knife that he carries around.
Very heavy.
A fight ensues between Andre and the hitchhiker, and the latter falls into the water. Andre and his wife search for him, but cannot find him and assume that he has drowned, since earlier he told them he could not swim. Andre and his wife quarrel about what to do, and Andre tries to escape his problems by jumping off the yacht and swimming to shore.
That's kind of what I do when I'm in trouble. I just jump in the river.
After telling his wife, you make me vomit.
Yes, he jumps off the boat and swims to shore.
Then he's just waiting later.
When the young man realizes that Andre has jumped off the yacht, he comes out from hiding behind the buoy on the lake and returns to the yacht, where Christina is drying off and wondering what to do next. Before the young man goes on his way, they have a passionate encounter.
Mm.
When Christina sails back to the dock, Andre is waiting. He wants to go to the police to report the young man missing. Christina tells him that the young man returned alive, but he remains unconvinced, even when Christina confesses to having been unfaithful. And that's pretty much where the film is...
It ends literally at a crossroads.
Yes, which I loved. But let's go back to the beginning.
Yes.
The first thing I want to talk about is the subtitles. Were you guys a little frustrated by them?
They were horrendous. There are times where they're talking and the subtitles aren't there. The fuck is going on?
This is a Criterion release.
Right. Yeah.
Unacceptable.
And these are subtitles by Roman Polanski.
Unacceptable.
I mean, maybe that was intentional. Maybe he thought like that
there's
other
stuff
wasn't
that you
important.
You can intuit
right.
yeah. by action. Like he does a really great job at like these characters physically show you what how they're feeling, what they're doing. But come on.
If
you're paying
signs,
$30 for this thing.
Yeah.
I started to have to learn Polish because I'm like, is he saying knife there? Because he'll say words and nothing will pop up.
I stopped the film and I ordered Rosetta Stone. I never started the film. I'm still learning right now, even as we're doing the show.
Can you pronounce the Polish version of the title?
Oh, God.
No.
Wizzy Wizzy.
Screen Door Submarine.
Oh no! See that's
oh no! Are we not
that's
gonna do
that old gag?
Are we not gonna do Polish jokes?
No.
I wrote a million Polish jokes down.
Instead of taking notes on the film, you just wrote Polish jokes.
I wrote on my hand more Polish jokes this episode.
That was really my first and only complaint about the movie.
Yep.
Other than that, it's a gorgeous film.
Yeah, it is.
That needs to be said.
I have a few complaints, but go on. Keep. Praise it for now.
Yeah, let's talk it up for a little bit.
The camera work is wonderful. It's very fluid, and the camera moves a lot. And
the cinematography is really fantastic, but I really, really want to put all these choices on Polanski.
Right.
This is his baby.
Yeah,
right.
he specifically said in that featurette that he was obsessed with the framing. He didn't do the cinematography, but he was there setting up all the shots.
He didn't do it, but he did.
Basically.
It helps that it's quote unquote a simple movie, but just from a visual storytelling standpoint, it's
fantastic.
Especially for a debut film, for a film from the 60s, it's so fluid and
it feels like a modern film.
Yeah, it does.
The acting,
I'll agree with that.
The look of it,
the
story itself,
the cameras,
subject matter.
Yeah.
The problem is, and Polanski talks about this, the camera The film was almost impossible to film because you get turned around in the water and all of a sudden the sun's in a different spot and it fucks up the continuity and the camera has to stay fixed so it's not like bobbing everywhere.
Right.
And it was almost
a real technical achievement.
They had to use handheld cameras, which didn't exist in the 60s really. So there's shots of them like standing in the water with like big Panavision cameras. I think what they did most of the time was film it in shallow water where you could stand and it just looks like they're out in deeper water.
Right.
But they had like this giant raft they built to kind of run back and forth next to the
boat.
This
thing looks so good.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Does. Yeah.
I would say that's the word, beautiful.
Yeah,
it looks awesome.
It looks fantastic. And not for one moment do you not feel the isolation
of
these three characters being all by themselves on
and the
boat.
Weirdness, like
this just this weird tension that permeates from second one, minute one, when it's just the husband and wife. There's a tension.
The film is like this is like psychology 101. The film basically, it's like male posturing the movie,
right?
And just there's like a lot of like I hate this. It's like the most stereotypical thing, but like Freud would have a field day with this film. Wow, 23 Skidoo. Like because there's
it doesn't
all
help that Freud was 100% wrong about everything.
Yeah,
either.
But he would love this movie.
Yes, he would.
Because like there's not only is there the male posturing, but there's a lot of like phallic stuff. Like he climbs that like
the knife in the water.
The knife itself is phallic, and then the hitchhiker climbs the mast.
The boat itself
is
Andre's penis.
Yeah, pretty much.
The boat's Andre's penis, and the enormous knife is the hitchhiker's penis.
Right.
That's what this is.
And then at the end of the film, they both take out their penises, and they sword fight with the peni, which is the plural of penis.
That must have been one of the extra features.
That was the director's cut I had.
What's the balls? That's what
that's the buoy.
No, you're right, because that initial act of him climbing the mast is what sets off Andre's repulsion of him.
Well, let's go back to
it's
the
posturing
then, because the film opens with Andre and Christina driving,
right?
And it opens with she's driving him and he becomes progressively annoyed
and we can't hear what they're saying,
yeah,
which I love. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, Yeah, it's filmed from outside of the car. Right.
Not that we would have had the subtitles anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. No, they would have left them out.
So, yeah, he becomes annoyed, and he makes her pull over, so he gets back in the driver's seat, and she's annoyed at him now. So there's already this tension building, and we have no idea what their history is before
yeah,
this.
Yeah, and he's clearly much older than she is, and...
Not like, a nice guy.
Yeah, and there's, like a patriarchal relationship. Like, you can tell, like, their relationship isn't, like...
Yeah, it's not like it's not mutual.
It's not like husband and wife love. It's more like he's like her father figure, basically. Yeah.
So Andre sees this young guy hitchhiking in the middle of the road up ahead, and he tries to scare him by swerving and trying to hit him, and he dives out of the way.
Right.
Andre pulls over and picks him up.
And he only picks him up as like an act of annoyance with the wife.
Yeah, he pretty much is it like to spite the wife, pretty much.
Yeah, that was an odd scene. I couldn't figure out what was going on. Like, right. Why did he pick her up? Because he says you would pick him up, wouldn't you?
I have trouble with the setup. Even him, the motivations for bringing him along is a little weak.
Yeah, before they get out into the water, it was sort of like shaky for me. It was sort of like, I don't buy why this is happening.
Yeah, when they drive to the lake, and twice the hitchhiker tries to leave on his own accord.
Right.
And Andre invites him back.
He tries to leave on his own accordion?
Yeah.
Just rides it out?
Yeah.
He's playing a squeeze box. he tries to leave on his own accord.
Honda Accord.
Yes. All right.
Okay, well, I'm just going to keep...
We got a million of them, folks.
Please don't stop.
And Andre invites him back constantly. So I kind of get the feeling that this type of thing is something Andre does. He tries to impress these young guys with his gravitas. And
he's also sort of just trying to, like...
Put him down.
And trying to, like, impress his wife, sort of, like, look at how much better I am than this fucking schmo.
Look at the man you marry.
Yeah.
But as much as there's, like, they're foils to each other, mm-hmm. they're also binaries, because at one point she says that they're the same person. He's just older and smarter, but more of an asshole. And he's younger and dumber, but... That actor, the young actor, was kind of strange.
Well, I think I had a problem with the hitchhiker performance because
the actor was 37 years old and he's supposed to be a 19-year-old.
It's not only that, but like it's Polanski dubbed that guy's dialogue, and there's a weird disconnect where it's like, even without knowing that, I could tell like it doesn't seem like that guy's voice.
Also, this guy looks like Polanski because Polanski wanted to be this character.
Right, but the studio or whatever said no.
So like he just cast himself essentially, and the fact that he plugged in his own audio is hilarious.
I think it does like a disservice to the film though, because like I can't like get behind that character's performance because I can tell the voice isn't right.
The boy had apparently a very weak, high-pitched voice.
Right.
And Polanski, I don't know if that's true or if it's just Polanski being a megalomaniac. But the strange thing
sounds like something he just like said to like cover it. Like, I didn't like his voice.
Yeah. The strange thing about these three actors is you have the guy playing Andre, insert Polish name in post-production there, who is a veteran theater actor.
Yeah, his name's Leon Niemczyk.
Knows what he's doing, is having a blast on set. You have the young kid who is very method, just out of acting school, and
that would be Zygmunt Milanowicz.
Yeah, he wasn't taking so Polanski was saying that he would let them rehearse the lines and kind of just give them direction that way, sort of improvisational, but the younger guy was having trouble with it because he wanted to be like really method and And then the chick was
Yolanda
not an actress.
She was a model, right?
Yeah. Well, they found her at a pool because Polanski said he couldn't get any actresses to do the part. His excuse was because this was his first film ever. It was probably because he was a total creep.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Again, that sounds like something he just said.
Yeah.
As he was just cruising around the YWCA.
Because she does get naked a few times for no reason.
Yeah.
But apparently she was terrible on set, and they had to tell her every single thing she had to do or she couldn't do it. The scene where he climbs back up onto the boat out of the water, and she has to, like, act like surprised. Mm-hmm. They had to shoot a flare gun off behind her head to get her to act surprised.
They did a fantastic job because I really liked her performance.
I was amazed by these stories.
I'm actually shocked hearing that.
When Polanski was saying it and then they're showing the footage over him talking, I was like, because the scenes where she goes and like gets the tray and brings it up, it felt very natural because the two guys are arguing with each other and she's always kind of in the background, but she's acting. She's not just a dud.
I think of these three characters, she is the one that's completely in control throughout the entire film, I feel. She's always on like a higher plane than those two because they're vying for control of her attentions and for control of their manhood, essentially.
Yeah.
But she is basically...
She's immune to that struggle because she doesn't take part
in
it.
She sees it. She's no dummy. She knows this is happening. And she's kind of annoyed by it.
Like the parts where she has to jump in and get the paddle. When they're pulling the boat through the reeds and the guy doesn't want to do it anymore, she's just like, okay, I'll fucking do it. Yeah. And then that makes him feel like he has to keep doing it. It is like masculinity versus femininity, I guess.
A big theme of the film is like anti-establishment versus order and discipline, because you got the hitchhiker who's just a wanderer who wanders the countryside. And
is he a wanderer?
Get a little Dion in the Belmont song, please. And then Andre is the seaman. I guess he was in the Navy, am I to believe?
He said he, because he asks him if he was in the war, or he asks him something like that, and he says no, that he was a university.
He's had a very structured life, and he's upper middle class for sure. He's successful.
Yeah, she says at one point that they came from the same background of being students living in a six-person apartment.
Right.
And that scene was actually added later because initially the National Board of Arts, they rejected it because there was no cultural value to the movie. Uh-huh. So all Polanski did was add that little bit of dialogue about the struggle of living in a six-person apartment.
It worked for me, though.
Yeah.
And it passed.
That worked for me because like it gave that character more depth for me, like having that line in there. So yeah, that worked well.
In the featurette, Polanski refers to it as socialist bullshit.
Right.
Okay, so they get on the boat and immediately Andre starts trying to teach lessons to this kid, like how to sail. And he right off the bat tells him, take the helm, knowing that he's going to fuck up because he's never done this before.
Well,
and of course...
I feel like he fucked up way too quickly.
The
minute he sits down, it turns into an earnest film where just everything that could possibly go wrong goes wrong.
Goofus and Gallus.
Yeah, just like the mass is flying everywhere.
Earnest film.
Ernest Goes Sailing, the film turns into...
Hey, Vern, where's my knife?
You guys are making the older guy to be more of a jerk, but the young kid was posturing. Like, he was acting like it wasn't a big deal.
I honestly feel like all three of these characters are complete assholes, honest to God.
They are.
Like,
they're not likable
people. No,
they're not good people.
No.
But interesting people for sure. So, Andre tells him take the helm knowing he's going to screw it up. And it's a typical alpha male thing where, like, look what you did. You couldn't do it, but I can.
Yeah.
But then, like Dave said, when the hitchhiker climbs the mast and goes up to the crow's nest, that's something Andre can't do.
Yeah.
So that is pretty... That's him showing, look what I can do.
He's like, look how virile I am. Yeah.
And, again, that's a phallic symbol.
Mast, big time. And
he pulls out his knife, and it's like literally... not literally. It's figuratively him pulling out his penis and showing everybody. Because the camera focuses real tight on this enormous cartoon knife.
Yeah, it's ridiculously big.
I really liked how Polanski framed some of those shots where there'd be something in the foreground and then it would pull away from it and show you what's happening behind it.
Right.
Yeah.
Those were cool. They did that with the knife where it was just laying on the thing and then...
Right. Yeah. And so, they go back and forth with this posturing. The hitchhiker says, I'll pull the boat. Everybody get in.
Right.
Saying, you can both be in there and I'll still be able to be strong enough to pull this boat away from the dock. I really like that. That was nice. But did you notice a lot of the Christ imagery? I can't imagine you wouldn't.
There's
Christine, the boat.
Yeah, the boat's name is Christine, and constantly... all you see in the frame is Christ.
Right.
And that's a blatant one.
I didn't pick up on that. Okay. But.
Well, there's like an overhead shot where the hitchhiker's like laying on the deck, and he's laying exactly.
It's the exact Christ pose.
He's laying exactly like Jesus lays when he goes on a boat.
But then he starts like.
Yes, he does his leg exercises.
Yeah.
Which is exactly how I stretch at the gym on leg day.
That's Jesus' leg day.
That scene is fucking incredible. The overhead shot of the boat, the three sections
beautiful,
of it.
Beautiful, beautiful scene.
And that's like a Trinity thing. The three, the body.
I didn't get that.
Whatever it is, the Holy Spirit.
Body.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's it. Right,
body works three.
But yeah, there's also when they're all actually having fun, the hitchhiker is hanging off the side of the boat on the sail, and he's literally walking on water.
Yeah, that scene was awesome, dude. It was just a fun scene.
That was great. And then there's a rebirth. Like, they think he dies, and he comes back, and swings back. Yeah. There's a lot of Christ imagery. And
there's the scene where the apostles, they play pickup sticks with each other in the Bible.
Yeah, you know the one. It's in the children's Bible.
That game angered me, just because, like...
It has no rhyme or reason.
This is like my OCD talking, but like I would get like 10 seconds into that game and be like, fuck this fucking game.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's basically they have coffee stirrers.
But that's another thing. They play a game that's like pickup sticks,
right,
where you take a handful of these straight sticks, let them fall where they may, and then you have to pick them up one by one, and you're not allowed to move any other stick aside from the one that you're trying to pick up.
Right.
And the only one that's good at the game that doesn't lose his... like an article of clothing, is Andre, because he's so disciplined and he's played it a million times.
And he has a fucking anecdote about pickup sticks where he tells of the best pickup stick player he ever played with. And the guy tells him, it's not just a game, it's a living organism.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, sir.
All of a sudden, David Cronenberg showed up.
Long live the new sticks.
You guys want to take a break and come back with some...
Yeah, we can take a break. I have a little more to say about this film.
Yeah, so do I.
And we'll play a game, too. It's not pickup sticks.
Oh. That wouldn't translate well over the air, I don't think.
Let's try it right now. No, it's not working.
No. Okay.
All right.
Commercial alert. Commercial alert.
Here at Cutprint Film, we do our very best to keep you in tune with the movie industry. We're revolutionizing the way you read movie reviews by putting them on the internet. Go to cutprintfilm.com, and we will guarantee you a pleasant experience. We're breaking new ground every day to bring you the finest material possible. We've partnered with such clients as morelikeradio.com, antifanboy.com, and Joystick Jerks, the podcast. So check out all of that and more on cutprintfilm.com. And remember... have a Cutprint Film day.
Everybody's dancing.
Hey, we're out on a boat with my weird-looking wife. This guy has a what? This guy has a knife.
Jesus. I would love to quit the show right
please,
now.
Please, don't ever stop.
Oh my god, I just put a bag over my head so nobody recognizes me.
And he can't swim. All right.
Man, thank god that's over.
I didn't realize that song had such a long intro.
Yeah, we should have picked it. Here it comes. See, I was close.
We don't want to get sued by the knife.
Might get one pulled off of YouTube.
One of our listeners is in the knife, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me.
It's their roadie, I believe.
All right, so Dave wanted to talk about something specific.
Did I? Okay, yeah. So we were discussing in between breaks, and then realized we were wasting precious gems of content.
Right.
That the title Knife in the Water and the reputation of Roman Polanski led us all to believe that there would be some murder and stuff like that.
Murder and mayhem.
Yeah.
And some intrigue.
Yeah. At least one stabbing, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I really did think this was going to end with the hitchhiker being killed because of the Christ imagery. And, you know, he's set up as this Christ figure. I thought he was going to die. And
that
he
gorgeous
doesn't.
Blonde hair.
Yeah, exactly. So we all know Jesus Christ is known for his shaved face, his pecs, and his blonde hair.
Yeah, and his knife.
His weird golem-like sitting position.
He's very hunched.
Yeah. So I was thinking that I mentioned earlier about their motivations for luring him onto the boat, and I started thinking maybe this is a thing they do.
That's what I thought.
They just lure men to their boat
and they
murder
kill
them.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. But then as the film, you know, went on and on, I started still thinking that that's something they do, maybe not exactly that, bring people onto their boat, but I do think that the Andre likes to assert himself, his manliness in front of his wife to people that he knows are lesser than him, less fortunate. You know, he's at a higher social status than this kid.
In retrospect, I liked this version better than my fake version where they murder people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
because it has more of like a realistic, and like you were just saying, the social weight of it.
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, the original plan for the film was going to be the hitchhiker dies, and basically the husband and wife, they just cover up the death. And I don't know, maybe I'm too much of a genre fan, but I actually would probably prefer that plot line than, because I feel like the ending is a little anticlimactic.
Here's why I like the way it ended the way it did. As far as Andre knows, he did die.
I mean, I like that part.
And Andre, because
the police station's in one direction and home is in another.
Christina tells Andre that in the car that he survived. The boy's alive. We don't have to go to the police. And Andre doesn't believe her. And then she tells him, and I also cheated on you with him.
Right.
And Andre, again, doesn't believe her. But then the wheels start turning in his head. And whether the kid died or whether she cheated on... Whether the kid's alive still or whether she cheated on him, Andre still loses.
Yeah,
right,
it doesn't
there's
matter.
No, yeah, it's lose.
You lose.
I like that... What I didn't like was like, sorry for saying like twice there, but
I'll have to brand you in the chest.
What I didn't enjoy was after the hitchhiker comes back on the boat and they apparently have sex off screen, she basically docks the boat and he just gets off the boat and walks away. I didn't like that. I was just like, oh, it seemed like there should have been more to him. He was just like, see ya. He didn't even say anything. He just walks away.
I see what you're saying, but he is a wanderer.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was. That's how he came in. Don't sing that song again, dude.
You shot me a look.
That's how he comes into the movie, and that's how he leaves from nowhere.
Yeah.
He comes in out of nowhere, and he leaves into God knows where.
Yeah, I could.
And I like that scene. I like him walking away on those logs.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
Another walking on water type thing.
And then her bringing the boat in by herself and docking it.
Shows that she's as capable of a seaman as Andre is.
Yeah.
And that's my wife actually brought up the point that she is the one that's in control this entire time while these two idiots are fighting back and forth for her attention and for like male dominance. She's the one
even
running.
Though at times she looks like she's in charge of the Starship Enterprise.
Well, yeah, she's off in space sometimes with that outfit and those eyes. But,
ugh. That outfit, yeah, she...
Let's talk about the outfits in this whole film, because there's not a whole lot of clothing going on.
Well, the beginning of the movie where you see the couple in the car, the wife is wearing, I don't know, she's
from the planet Melmac.
Yeah, she's dressed like an alien in a film set in the future that was filmed in the 50s, where it's just distracting, and she... It's like a government-issued coat she's wearing, or like communism gave her a coat, and
it's
she's
very
wearing
plain,
it.
It's very... I don't know. There's something off about the outfit that she's got on.
It's interesting, though, because she starts off in that, and then on the boat, she's all, you know, she's objectified, I guess you could say, where she's constantly in forms of undress.
Right. But everyone is.
Yeah. And then at the end of the film, she gets right back into her Planet Melmac outfit. So,
But I liked how most of the film, these characters are in a fairly... vulnerable state of undress.
Yeah.
Well,
these bathing suits are small, and this is 1963, right?
62.
And that's pretty risque for the time.
Yeah.
Clothing plays a huge part in the themes of the movie, because when Andre jumps off and he gets on, there's two robes, and he puts Andre's robe on.
Yep.
And then she's wearing Andre's sweatshirt, and they bang. And then Andre gets back on the boat after she docks it, and the first thing he does is put that sweatshirt on. So it's like the kid banged him.
Yeah, the kid definitely comes out on top. I mean, he wins.
He's a top.
Yeah, he's a top.
The hitchhiker definitely wins the game because he does refer to it as a game in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
So the kid absolutely wins. Andre has been cuckolded, essentially.
It's almost like, and I'm glad I didn't do this, but like if the film had ended with like the hitchhiker never existed, it would have actually worked. Because the hitchhiker
I'm
is
glad
like,
didn't do that though.
But like no one else sees the hitchhiker except this couple, and at the end of the film, he's gone. It's like he's like a ghost, more or less.
There was like a hint of that.
Yeah.
At one point, somebody says like, "Oh, it doesn't matter at either way."
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's when they think he's dead.
Right.
Andre says that.
And like, yeah. Even if the hitchhiker had died, it almost wouldn't matter because like it's like who fucking cares? Like, no, he clearly has no like family or anything. Like that.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge thematic element of the story. And it's also was a strange choice that Andre was played by Andre the Giant.
Yes, it was.
Especially to be a 19-year-old to be a 19-year-old hitchhiker. I don't understand.
I am the dwarf. That's my Andre the Giant impression.
Take my robe off.
That was terrible.
I tried, at least.
That was really bad. That was worse than mine.
I gave it a shot.
I wish I could crawl under the table.
Well, what will our next Polanski movie be? Oh, well, next week we're doing Gone Girl.
Yeah, next week we're taking a little break from the director series.
There's movies coming out that matter.
Yeah, we're in that good season. We're going to be talking about primarily about Gone Girl, but definitely we will be touching on Left Behind, starring the great Nick Cage.
The Christian fantasy film Left Behind.
It's about the rapture
and
what happens when Nicolas Cage gets involved.
And the review for that film will be up this week, so look out for it.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
But
can I ask one question about Gone Girl?
Hopefully it's not an inanity like you normally throw at me. Yeah.
Hopefully it's not utter bullshit like everything else
you
say.
Does it open with a classic James Bond-esque song, like Gone Girl? She's a girl and she's gone and she's not coming home.
Did you listen to that soundtrack that NPR posted? It's the first track.
I keep singing that for some reason.
Tina Turner sings it.
Ike Turner sings it. Oh, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. Next week we'll be doing Gone Girl. The week after that, we'll be back to the director series talking about Roman Polanski's Macbeth.
Yes.
With a question mark.
So brush up on your Shakespeare.
Yes, brush up. Brush those teeth.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's uncanny.
Beautiful. Now I think we're going to play a little game.
Yeah. Oh, just like the Saw films. You want to play a little game? They're bad.
But this game should be pretty good. It's backed by popular demand.
Yes.
The Parents Guide.
Help your parents around the house. There are many jobs you can do that will make things easier for father and mother.
It's Parents Guide, the show that lets parents decide what their kids can and cannot watch.
Your parents will appreciate your help, just as Tommy's father and mother do.
Parents Guide!
Who's
that
Tommy?
Absolutely kills me.
We'll never know who Tommy was, but his parents really appreciate his help.
Tommy's dead, I'm sure.
It's Tommy Lee they're talking about.
He's going
from Motley Crue.
Let me get the little music bed going.
Yeah.
There we go.
So for those at home who are unfamiliar, the gist of Parents Guide is...
No, do it in your game host version. Voice.
I can't perform like that. The gist of Parents Guide is IMDb has a section called Parents Guide.
We're reading IMDb Parents Guide.
Yes, we're going to read an IMDb Parents Guide where helpful people at home post a guide to parents about what is blah, blah, blah in their film.
You guys get it.
Also known as assholes who have nothing better to do.
Yeah, exactly. Uptight jerk-offs.
Yeah, this is the uptight game.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff will soon be a parent. How often will you be referencing the
Parents
Guide?
Will you be consulting Parents Guide?
Non-stop.
Yeah, I thought so.
Should I watch Arachnophobia with my infant daughter?
Yeah, should I show my newborn daughter Deep Throat?
How about you watch the movie first and then figure it out?
Yeah, exactly. So, who wants to go first?
Well, not me.
Okay. I'll go first.
Go for it.
Do we have a scorecard?
No.
All right. Well, now we do.
Get your tattoo gun out. Use my back. All right. I have three clues for each of these movies.
Yes.
Clue number one. A character accidentally says asshole in front of a baby. Then the baby...
Like it wasn't supposed to be in the script.
Then the baby repeats asshole a few times throughout the movie. Anybody have this? Anybody want to take a guess?
Look Who's Talking.
No.
Is it asshole ahoy?
No. What? Is that a delicious brand of cookies?
Yes.
Okay. So no and no. All right. It's not assholes ahoy or look who's talking. Clue number two. In a scene, a dog gets flushed down a toilet. And this may be frightening to animal lovers.
It may be. What dog can get flushed down a toilet? What the
I believe it's a Great Dane, if I'm not mistaken.
Is this Chihuahuas?
Nope. That's
yeah,
not
Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Yeah, that movie.
Chris?
I feel like... all right. It's like a family film, right?
Sort of.
Is it one of the Beethoven films?
No, it is not.
Is it Problem Child?
It is not.
Stop
Problem
guessing.
Child.
All right.
This is the last clue. A dog humps a woman's leg. A man watching says, "Don't worry, the pink bit didn't touch you." Inferring that the dog's penis was becoming erect and extending from its sheath.
There's a lot of dogs in this movie.
Are dogs a major part of the movie?
Not really.
Oh, well, thanks for picking all dog clues.
Well,
is it all dogs go to heaven?
It's a family film.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Obviously, it's a comedy because the dog's penis is coming
from... It's not a drama.
It's Apocalypse Now, I believe, is this film.
Venture a guess, Dave?
I'm gonna say... I don't know.
Yeah, this one has me stumped.
All right, do you give up?
No, hold on. Home Alone 3.
No, it is not Home Alone 3. It is 2004's Meet the Fockers.
Oh, my God. I don't think I ever saw that
never
one.
Saw that.
I saw the
I
first one. I saw the first one, and then I took my suicide pill.
All right, who's
now
next?
Now we're speaking to your ghost.
I'll go next. A monster unzips his pants in front of a woman. No nudity is visible. She makes crude remarks about his endowment. He lays on top of her, and we see him moving as he groans and she moans and begins to sing. Intercourse is implied.
Monster. Oh, man.
He begins to sing?
Is it Little Monsters?
No.
Okay.
While banging, they're singing?
I'm not going to tell you anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, next clue. A man grabs the throat of a corpse and beats it in anger.
Oh, I know what this is. It's The Hills Have Eyes.
No.
Yeah.
There's no monster sex. Well, I guess there, yeah. No.
Is this the Tales from the Crypt movie?
No. I wish.
What's that called?
Demon Night?
Several of them.
It's either Demon Night or Bordello of Blood.
All right,
and here's our last clue. A man flirts with a woman and she appears uninterested.
That's it?
I don't know why that's a parent's guide thing. I don't...
Well, why didn't he start with that clue? I would have had it.
All right, I'll give you one more.
Okay.
A man bites a woman's scarf and she slaps him. Again,
what?
I don't
is
know.
Is this Arthur?
No. All right. It's in black and white, but it's not that old. And it's a comedy. And there's a monster in it.
Oh, is this...
I don't know.
Oh,
Shadow Young of the Frankenstein.
It is Young Frankenstein. Yes, Dave gets it.
I got a point!
All right, Dave's got one. I have 12, and Jeff has zero.
Chris, can I see your card?
Okay, so in this movie, a man removes a woman's clothes, and we... Oh, wait, no, that's the wrong clue.
Excellent.
All right, we're off to a great
okay,
start.
Well, this,
good job,
a man and a woman hug, and he grabs her buttocks. And then that leads us to, we see artistic drawings of nude men on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel.
What?
What the?
Oh, man.
Is it 6 degrees of separation?
Is it the Da Vinci Code?
The Da Vinci Code?
I guess not.
No, sorry.
It's not 6 degrees of separation?
No.
All right.
At this next clue, this is under the sex and nudity portion.
That's my favorite portion.
Yeah.
A man says to a woman, "Let's have a baby."
How risque.
I know, very crude.
Sistine Chapel.
Let's have a baby Sistine Chapel.
Grabbing. Wait, whose buttocks got grabbed? The man or the woman?
The woman.
And it was bear buttocks?
It was a bear's buttocks?
Yeah, it was a bear's buttocks.
No, a man and a woman hug and he grabs her buttocks. You may be confused with a man removes a woman's clothes and we see her lace bra and panties.
Is it the next clue?
No, that was the first clue that I shouldn't have read.
All right.
Shit.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well,
give me the third one.
We see a woman's dead body laying on the ground after she commits suicide. There is a numerous amount of blood on her face.
Is this The Omen?
The ground and a nearby car. We see the image only once. You're close.
It's not The Omen. Is it The Omen 2?
It's not The Exorcist, because there's no butt grabbing
no.
in that.
Alright. You guys are on the right track.
Alright, so it's horror. It's in like that 70s era. Like,
it's pertinent.
What the fuck?
Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
It is?
Really?
Give me the point!
Bing, 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 bing.
I don't remember. I guess I don't remember the buttock grab.
That's all I remember.
I don't remember the Sistine Chapel thing either.
Well, all it's right. here.
Okay. It's, give me a point. I have one. You have one.
I got zilch. Zip. I'm doing bad this time. I won last
Is this
time.
The final round?
No, this is round two. Clue number one. A man has a large bloody wound on his chest, which does not appear to be healing.
I hate when that happens.
Is this Videodrome?
No. Good guess, but not a good guess, but, you know.
Yeah. It's good that you attempted yes. something.
Nice work, Dave.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Is the man dead? Is that why it's not healing?
I can't divulge that.
I don't know. That's just...
All right. If you pass.
What era is it from?
2000s.
Okay. Jeff's in the millennials.
Large wound on his chest.
You already guessed.
I didn't, actually. But I got nothing. I don't know.
Is it Hoosiers?
Yeah, is it the Hoosiers films? All of them.
Next clue.
A girl falls into a lake and a young man panics and jumps in to retrieve her. She's fine. And becomes angry when he realizes that she was testing him.
Cabin Fever.
No.
Damn it. Cabin Boy.
No. Here's clue number three. The word cunt, although never spoken, plays a very important role in the story.
Atonement.
It is Atonement!
Oh, I've never
seen Atonement!
I've never seen Atonement.
Alright, Dave has 2 points somehow.
Wait, what was the first clue again?
A man has a large bloody wound on
his
chest.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't appear to be healing.
Oh, well.
Chris?
Okay. I wonder why it's not healing.
First clue. A baby is shown fully nude.
Look who's talking.
Is this Nirvana?
No.
Never mind.
Second clue. A scene where a blowjob was implied in a fridge.
What the hell?
Blowjob in a fridge? Like in like a freezer closet?
I'm just reading the quote. I don't know.
Is there numerous
Did
amount
you say
of
freezer
blood?
Closet? Is that what you call a fridge?
Ice box.
A meat locker.
From Little Giants.
It just says a scene where a blowjob was implied in a fridge.
Little Monsters.
No. Are you going to guess
Hollow
that every
Man.
Time? Hollow Man. No. Not okay. Hollow Man. All right, last clue. Someone stands in front of a mirror in his underwear admiring himself, and you can clearly see his bulge.
Is this American Psycho?
No.
Fuck.
There's no naked babies in American Psycho. I'd remember.
Boogie Nights?
Yes! Yeah. Dave is killing it!
Fire! Dave is a piece of shit. I'll have that.
3, 2, 1.
It's all right. When the game is over, we're taking all of Dave's points away.
It's a stipulation.
Yeah.
All right. So who's up next?
You.
Me?
Yeah, you. You, winner.
Okay.
This is still round two.
You're right there?
At your leisure, Dave.
Yeah, we're waiting.
Okay. A dead man is shown nude, front. Although his whole body is blurred off, this is brief and shown in a non-sexual sense.
Blurred
dead
off.
Dead man is shown nude. I mean, seven.
No.
All right.
Okay. Dave doesn't like to tell us whether we're right or wrong.
Is it Shallow Grave?
No.
All right.
A group of scantily clad models provokingly perform in front of a military audience.
Oh, is it Apocalypse Now?
Yes.
All right.
All right, Chris is on the board.
I got a point, finally.
You said it earlier, and I was like, oh no.
I pre-guessed.
Round three, everybody. Clue number one. A teen boy has a poster of a woman with large breasts in his bedroom.
Ooh.
One character, fascinated, holds his hands up to the poster and makes squeezing gestures. Another character addresses them as Gonzagas.
Ugh.
Oh, I know this,
too. I do, too, but I can't.
What is it?
It's not American Pie, is it?
It is not.
All right.
I think he calls them Gazungas, not...
Well, this idiot said Gonzagas.
Oh,
I have it in quotes.
Is it the Goonies?
No.
I feel like it's one
that
of those...
would be Gonzagas.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of those movies like that where it's fucking kids acting
stupid. Give it to me.
Stupid.
You have a guess?
I don't know. Okay. I know that I know it, but I'm going to get it.
All right, give us a second cue.
Clue number two. A teen is seen heavily groping his girlfriend's buttocks before the camera pans away up to the two making out.
Oh, it's Rosemary's Baby again.
No,
all
it's
right.
Not.
Terminator 2?
No. Great guess, though.
Terminator 2, Gazanga's Day was the title.
Clue number three. Drinking is shown. Plus, it's painfully obvious that the character named Stoney is a stoner.
Stoney?
It's not Dazed and Confused, is
no.
it?
No.
Oh, fuck.
Drinking is shown, and these are teens drinking.
And the character named Stoney.
The character named Stoney is Stoney.
He's a stoner.
Is it Milk Money?
No.
That fucking.
I remember that.
With Ed Harris.
Terrible.
Ugh.
Is it. Oh, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
No, you're dancing around the right area, and that's the third clue.
All right, give us something else that's not a Parent's Guide thing. Or I don't know. Who's in it?
Who's in it?
Not like the star, just someone.
Brendan
in it.
Fraser.
Is it Encino Man?
Yes!
Yes! Two for Chris. I lose terribly.
Hey, you could still tie Dave.
Yeah. What is Dave at? What do you got, Dave?
Dave has three.
All right, I have two. What do you have? One?
One.
Yeah, I have one.
All right.
Okay. You're Chris.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, everyone.
You better be.
One use of God, one use of hell. Several uses of general name-calling, such as jerk, nutcase, dork, worm, nerd, witch.
Hocus pocus.
No.
Shit. I'm just gonna guess. Dunstan checks in.
No.
Okay.
All right, next clue. Husbands and wives kiss in several scenes. Two teens kiss passionately. The mother makes a reference to a boy being in the dark with her daughter. A boy said, this is all one paragraph,
wow.
So it counts as one clue.
This guy's a lunatic.
A boy says he learned to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation in French class. A teen girl talks about a boy she would like to date. A boy asks a girl for a date. A man tells another man that his wife has plumbing trouble. I don't know why
Jesus.
This is all lumped together, but it was.
Adam's Family?
Nope.
Am I close?
I mean, it's a quote-unquote family film.
Plumbing trouble.
The witches?
No.
Witch.
Shit. I'm gonna guess Uncle Buck.
No, it's... Alright, last clue.
Okay.
I think someone will get it on this one. Children constantly fall, slide, and are attacked by insects. A boy cuts his lip, and blood is shown running down his chin.
I got it.
Jeff, you can go first.
You gotta play
as
rock, paper, scissors.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Yes! Okay. Alright, Jeff gets it.
Alright.
I instead of tallies, I'm just writing the numbers
That's
over
fine.
Top of each other.
That's fine.
Like a imbecile.
Dave, you're either going to win here or Chris will tie it.
Yeah.
Okay. Or no, we're all tying.
This first one is not helpful at all. But
oh, good. I love this.
It.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
Because it's funny.
Okay.
There is one very subtle size joke. Children will not pick up on it.
Why even point it out then?
I hope not.
Is it Godzilla where all the posters said size doesn't matter from 1998?
I don't have a guess for that one.
Okay. My second one is this. Where did it go? Blank is impaled by an icicle, but no blood is shown.
Is it Die Hard 2?
It is done in a comic way.
I guess that's not the... is it Frozen?
Yes!
What?
Holy shit!
Come on!
Well... We end on a tie.
Yes, we have no tie. I don't have a tiebreaker.
All right. Well, we'll just have to shake hands and then legs
and then make out.
And then when the show ends, I'll stab Dave.
All right.
Well, that was the parents' guide, and next will be our recommendations.
Let's watch Cutthroat Film Weekly movie recommendations.
Because it's on time, right, guys?
Yeah.
Incorrect. Incorrect.
There's actually, you could hear Chris laughing in the background of that recording.
When it was recorded.
All right. I'm going to go first.
Please do.
My recommendation is a film that came out this year. In fact, it came out a few weeks ago.
Oh.
It's called Startup. And it's directed by David McKenzie, who did a lot of bullshit, like Spread, starring Ashton Kutcher, and a movie called Tonight Your Mind, which I'll never watch. But this is a very good movie. It stars Jack O'Connell, Ben Mendelsohn, and Rupert Friend, who you've seen Rupert Friend in other things.
Oh, he's my best friend.
That's right.
He's my best Rupert.
I don't think you understand.
And this movie is about a troubled and explosively violent teenager who is transferred to an adult prison where he finally meets his match, a man who happens to be his father. Ooh. And that is an incredibly reductive movie synopsis that I got from IMDb.
Yeah.
This film is really good. You're going to need to watch it with subtitles turned on.
Okay.
If you have Apple TV or something like that.
Why is it?
Because it's a British film, and these are thick accents.
Like the Pikeys and Snatch?
Yeah, this is like Welsh accents going crazy here. I had a hard time following everything, but it's such a good movie. The performances are unbelievable. This kid, played by David McKenzie, or played by Jack O'Connell, is so violent. It brings to mind Bronson
a little
bit, but
I was thinking,
it's a different type of movie.
Right.
This is... Bronson's a true story, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's about Charles Bronson.
Yeah, it's about the real Charles Bronson.
Death Wish.
It's about the making of Death Wish 4.
The finest of the Death Wishes. But yeah, the violence is incredible to watch, and it's just really great. Watch for the performances alone. These are great actors, and the whole thing takes place in a British prison that's just filthy.
I've been hearing nothing but amazing
things. It's about anger management. There's an anger management group in the prison, and it's just really well done. Great acting.
Sounds good.
So yeah, that's my pick. 2014's Startup.
What a good year.
Hail Satan!
Well, Jeff, you and I have something in common.
Uh-oh. We both picked Startup.
Yes.
No,
but surprisingly.
Have cancer. Oh.
Cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your doctors told me that. They shouldn't have done that.
All my doctors said was my Lanta.
I'm recommending Steve McQueen's 2008 feature film debut, Hunger.
Oh.
Oh, the Hunger Games.
No.
Oh, no?
Hungry Hungry Hippos, the movie?
Dave's just not going to ignore it. Yeah.
Just bulldozed right through me.
I wasn't ready for it, okay?
Hail Satan!
This film also entirely takes place in a prison in the United Kingdom, in Northern Ireland.
This is on my to-watch list. For some reason, I haven't gotten around to watching this.
Yeah, because I love Steve McQueen movies.
In the 80s.
Bullying.
I love Steve McQueen movies, and this is my favorite Steve McQueen movie.
Right. Really?
Yes. And I watched... I had seen it third out of all of them.
Right.
I saw Shame, then 12 Years a Slave, and then this.
And then The Great Escape.
Anyway, this movie takes place...
Steve McQueen.
Oh, sorry.
There's no motorcycle jumping in this.
Damn it. Well, then why would I watch it?
This movie takes place during the Troubles in Northern Ireland.
Awesome.
Michael Fassbender in his breakout performance, I would say.
His breakdance performance, I believe.
Plays Bobby Sands, who was part of the IRA.
Okay.
And I guess they're separatists.
Yeah.
But this, like you were saying, the violence in this film is insane. But it's all the guards just beating the shit out of... Like, they're protesting from within the prison, and it's insanity. They were doing this thing called the blanket protest, which was they refused to wear prison clothing. So they would only wear blankets. They wanted to wear civilian clothing because they wanted to, the whole movie.
This reminds me a lot of In the Name of the Father.
I've never seen that. So
great film. I recommend that this week.
Hail Satan!
The whole thing is that they want to achieve political status as political prisoners,
okay,
but they're being treated like common criminals.
Okay.
Bobby Sands blew up some fucking furniture store that was run by a loyalist and was carrying a pistol while doing it, and was charged for the pistol, was given 12 years for having the pistol, but nothing to do with blowing up the store. Like, is this weird Orwellian kind of thing that they did because Margaret Thatcher thought they were the scum of the earth?
Right.
I started feeling intense, like Irish national pride, even though I'm not Irish.
The Irish have not had it all that bad throughout the centuries.
No, I wouldn't. But this is incredible. It also features one of my favorite scenes ever filmed. It's a long take between Michael Fassbender and Liam Cunningham, who plays Sir Davos Seaworth on Game of Thrones.
He's playing the same character in this.
Yes,
very odd.
It's a crossover.
Similar roles, actually, like as an advisor. He's Bobby Sands' Catholic priest, and it's just this one shot looking onto them, but it goes on for like 17 minutes, no cuts.
That's amazing.
It is an amazing thing to watch.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I gotta watch this for sure.
The prison was called The Maze. It's just like, it's surreal. Like,
I will
cue insane.
This up for sure.
You guys should watch it. That is 2008's Hunger.
Hail Satan! Hail Satan! Hail Satan!
Chris,
I'll never get tired of that. Well, my pick ties into Knife in the Water in the sense that it could almost be a cheap remake of Knife in the Water. It's not
Captain Ron.
Yes, exactly. It's 1989's
Steak Knife in the Water.
1989's Good night. I can't top that. 1989's Dead Calm.
Oh, okay.
All right, so this is an Australian film. Basically, Sam Neill and Nicole Kidman, they play a couple. They're on a yacht. And they also pick up a stranger, played by Billy Zane. Remember him?
The great William Zane.
Yes. And whereas, basically, the twist we thought was coming comes in this film, but in a different way, where basically the person they pick up is a serial killer. And so they're all trapped on a yacht with him. And basically, he's basically trying to get into Nicole Kidman's pants, and Sam Neill is in the way. And
which is impossible, because he's a size 36 and she's a size 2.
I know.
He'll never fit in those jeans.
It's boffo, if you will. But
I'm looking at the Google images of this movie, and it just looks like Knife in the Water.
It's
look up the Bing images.
Like, when I... like, for a while, before I knew more about Knife in the Water, I always thought this was just a remake of Knife in the Water, because they're very similar in just tone and style, and just the plot of the movie is very similar. And
these Mr. Skin images suggest that he does, in fact, get into Nicole Kidman.
Yes. Spoiler. Yeah, this Nicole Kidman's very young in this film. It's one of her very early films, but she still had, like, spaghetti curl hair.
Yeah, she had noodle hair.
Yeah, and she was very Australian.
Her hair looked like Mr. Perfect, the wrestler. I don't know if you remember him.
Was this the prequel to Australia, the other?
Yeah, it was, yeah. At the end of the film, they land in Australia, and then that film begins.
I remember seeing this on Prism, the movie channel, when I was younger.
Yeah, this is one of those movies you would see on Prism. It was one of the movies like your parents would watch, and they would say, oh, don't watch this. It's got dirty stuff in it, and then you would seek it out.
I'd VHS tape it.
Yeah, so it's... I used to love it when I was a kid. It doesn't hold up as much as when I was a kid and I was like, this is awesome because it's got boobs in it. But, yeah. But.
I'm always looking for butt in my films.
It's a pretty solid thriller. It was directed by Philip Noyce, who's made such memorable films as The Bone Collector.
Which I saw in theaters.
And he also directed Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, you know, those boring Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan films.
The Bone Collector.
Yeah, so this is probably the movie of his I enjoy the most with that career. So 1989's Dead Calm, or Dead Clam, if you want to call it that.
I'd love to call it that.
Now this podcast is dead over.
That's right.
Well,
we've learned a lot today. Like, you should go to cutprintfilm.com for some great movie reviews and editorials and what have you.
Yeah.
And you can find this very podcast over there.
The what have you is my favorite part of the site.
There's a lot of bullshit on cupprintfilm.com, all for your enjoyment. Speaking of bullshit, head on over to antifanboy.com.
Oh my god!
They do a podcast about comic books and video games and all that good stuff. Any other podcasts people can listen to?
The Mr. Skin podcast. Where they just
Skincast.
Yeah, it's really good.
Baby, don't put that knife in the water.
So I guess we don't have any more podcasts to recommend.
Sure we do. Joystick Jerks.
Oh.
You can find them at joystickjerks.com. And that's C-O-M, not C-A-L-M. I don't know what type of lunatic you are that you would type that in.
Go to anti-fanboy dead calm. Okay, what? That didn't work.
Nope.
That joke was dead on arrival.
Yes, it was. What else? What do we have coming? Oh, yeah. We have the review for Gone Girl coming up this week.
Gone Girl's coming up this week. Left Behind review's coming up this week. And also part one of my exhaustive, and by exhaustive, I'm fucking exhausted, Saw retrospective, where I'm going through all the films because October's coming and we're going to have a lot of Shocktober content for you.
So we're specifically referring to October as Shocktober through all walks of our day. So even at work, like if I have to schedule something, I'll schedule for Shocktober 3rd.
Right, and if I'm gonna sit down and watch The Hunt for Red Shocktober, you're not gonna stop me.
I will still refer to it as Metallotober.
That doesn't work.
Very interesting that you're gonna do that.
Well, guys, we had fun with Roman Polanski. Would you say?
I loved this movie. Knife in the Water was fantastic.
I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would.
So did I.
It is dark.
Chris hated it.
And beautiful.
I wouldn't say I hated it. I didn't like it as much as you guys. All but right. I'm a picky bastard.
We'll have to kiss about it.
That's all right.
Oh yeah.
Take it home.
You just can't help yourself.
Me and Robert Loggia, we've been practicing these lyrics all week.
He plays and you sing.
It shows. You guys have great chemistry. And the fact that we got rid of Whoopi Goldberg so cavalierly is
she just wasn't working out.
Yeah. Well.
I hate everyone in this room.
Oh.
I love you all out there in podcast land. Listen this week, next week, every week before this week.
And all the weeks after.
Just don't listen to episode one because you'll never find it.
I've eaten it. I've eaten
Have
all the
tape. Have a lovely evening. Is that part of your diet, the tape?
Yeah.